Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. And today we invite back Lisa Johnson. Lisa is the Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator, and it's always great to have her come by. She stops by every so often, every month or two, and we talk about all kinds of things. We might talk about trees or we might talk about flowers. She loves to talk about flowers. And we can talk about maybe cleaning up the vegetable garden, lots of things with her. She can pretty much cover the whole area, and I hope you'll join in with your questions. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us, and that address is talk@wpr.org. Lisa, great to have you back.
Thanks, Larry.
What kinds of things are you hearing from folks these days? What's coming into the office over there?
Well, the calls are slowing down, of course, with
of course.
The winter approaching, or maybe I shouldn't say the W word quite yet.
No. Don't say that.
We're getting calls about pruning and proper time for different plants, and we're getting calls about some box elder bugs and lady bugs and the multicolored Asian lady beetles in the house, and mulching for winter and when you should do that and so on.
You know what? Those are all good topics.
They are.
They're great topics for the for today. And Dan in Partyville already has a question for you. Not exactly related to any of those topics, but close. Hi. Thanks for calling, Dan.
Thanks for taking my call. I've got kind of an odd question. I've got a deer problem, and I've got some young trees, a red bud, a small lilac, and some arborvitae that I want to cover. Can I use my sheets that I use to cover flowers to protect them from frost, or are those not porous enough?
I don't think they'll keep the deer out. You probably, are these short plants, or are they tall yet?
The red bud's probably 6 foot tall, but the little branches are pretty tender yet.
Yeah.
The arborvitae we've always had problems with.
Yeah, that's probably their very favorite at the top of their menu.
And then the lilac's a little too big to put a cone on.
Okay. Well, you'll probably have to use a variety of methods then. And actually, that works really well with deer because they tend to get used to one deterrent or the other. You know, if you just use, for instance, bags of human hair hanging in the plant, they'll be repelled for a while, and then they'll decide, not so bad.
Not so
and,
bad.
And they'll start to go after the material. But if you vary, maybe spraying some liquid fence, which, by the way, it smells revolting, so make sure you're upwind rather than downwind when you're spraying it. And that you don't have to reapply too many times either, but I'd recommend some of that for the small things. If you can use some kind of fencing, hardware cloth, chicken wire, anything like that would be helpful. Particularly don't use your sheets on the arborvitae because those don't go completely dormant over the winter. You always will have problems with that plant, I'm afraid, with deer. As I mentioned, it's one of their very favorite foods.
Yeah, well, they don't go after those plants until the snow falls.
Right.
Until later in the winter, so
right.
I want to protect them with something.
Right.
Fiberglass screen or... You say chicken wire, you can buy that netting that's specifically made for deer, but that's kind of expensive.
Yeah, right. And put in some fence posts and then wrap the wire around it. You may want to try some people hang CDs from the branches and the flashing scares the deer. So I would use a variety of all those different methods, particularly on the plants that you can't fence because they're too big.
They're too big, yeah. Constant battle all winter long, Dan. Of course, a nice big fence would solve all the problems.
Oh, yeah. That's really spendy. You might want to check out our publication, Plants That Are Not Favored by Deer. You can find that at the Learning Store site.
UW Extension Learning Store.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There you go, Dan. Thanks for calling. Nate in Madison. Let's go to you next. Hi, Nate.
Hi. I have a American plum tree in my yard, and it seems to have gotten some type of a disease, and one part of the tree was obviously dying. It would get leaves and they just fall off quickly halfway through the summer. So I cut that part off, but I'm wondering, once a tree has a disease like that, is it pretty much eventually just all going to die, and might as well just cut the whole thing down?
Well, it depends on what kind of disease it is. I was first imagining that you were probably going to say that it had black knot fungus, which it's very common with plum trees, and you usually will see distorted branches. Our plant pathologist likes to call it, pardon me, but poop on a stick, mm-hmm. which is a fairly descriptive term. And it's black, hard material, and it does tend to kill off the branch areas fairly slowly. But what you've got sounds like it might be fire blight. Did you notice any sunken areas in the branches or the bark, or any sap coming out?
I can't remember. Possibly. There did seem to be kind of a canker on that part of the trunk. It kind of split into three trunks when it was young, and on the one that's diseased kind of had a little canker at the bottom.
Okay, so you know what cankers look like. Good for you.
I think.
Yeah, it's usually a sunken, discolored area, and with fire blight, there is a bacterial organism that causes that disease, and it overwinters in those cankers, and then in spring, it starts to come out and kind of ooze out the edges, and our pollinating insects, the bees and flies, find that bacterial sap substance very tasty because it's got a lot of sugar in it, and they're attracted to it. They get it on their feet, and then they spread it to the flowers, and then you get it in the vascular system, and then you're in big trouble. So if that's what it is, you probably will see a continuation of those symptoms next year. When you do make a cut, that's the only practical way. Well, there are a couple practical ways. Pruning is one of them, to try and keep it under control. There's no real cure, but you can cut it about 6 to 8 inches below where you see visible symptoms. Make sure that you clean off your pruning shears in between cuts, because if it is in the vascular system, you risk spreading it to the rest of the tree whenever you make a cut. So you want to use something like rubbing alcohol. That's probably the cheapest and easiest mm-hmm. thing to disinfect your tools with. And what you should do is look on the branches, see if you see any more of those cankers. If you do, you know, if you cut off that major third branch during the dormant season, you might be able to slow it down quite a bit. You want to do as little pruning as possible during the growing season, because that bacteria, it's active. So at that time of year. So depending on, you know, which of these conditions it is, and there might even be something else, that it could be fruit trees are susceptible to so many
things,
unfortunately.
But those are the two
most common things. You can also spray your tree in the dormant season again in the spring with Bordeaux mix. And that's the same thing as lime sulfur. It's copper sulfate. And you want to spray that before the buds start to turn green. Mm-hmm. And you do it twice, 4 days apart.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Nate. Appreciate your call. You can join us, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Constance and Eagle, it's your turn. Hi, Constance.
Okay, I'm a little embarrassed about this, but a friend of mine recommended, I said I didn't want to plant any vegetables because the deer would eat them, and she said, you know what works is human urine. So I tried it, and I didn't have any deer damage all year.
Yeah.
I take it it's spread around the perimeter of the vegetable garden?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, they do use fox urine and other predator scents and urines to achieve the same result. So
exactly.
Why it shouldn't work. But again, the thing I would caution you about is that when we have a lot of rain, those things don't always hang around for too long. Now, granted, there's a fairly renewable supply, but you do have to reapply But if it worked for you, great.
Great. Excellent. Thanks, Constance. Appreciate it. And Allison in Milwaukee, on to you. Hi.
Hi. I have a cottage in Vilas County on a lake with about a 30-degree grade. And over the years, lots of pine needles and leaves have accumulated on the hill. And because the soil is extremely sandy, I'm thinking that because I have some weeks right now, I'd like to go up and remove those extra leaves and pine needles and maybe bring in some soil to help shore up that hill. It's not like anything's in danger of falling down the hill. It's just the erosion seems to be increasing over the last, like, two decades. And so I didn't know if that's, first of all, a bad idea to do this time of year, because once there's a melt, then maybe the soil would just come right off. Or if then I'm thinking I need to also get advice about what I should plant on the hill to help hold soil when I do it, if it isn't now, because the deer will eat something if I don't put in the right thing.
Yeah, that's
true. And this is a fully shaded area, I take it.
It's what?
Fully shaded. I mean, it's all trees?
Yeah.
Okay. The problem is that you can't really build up the slope in the areas that the trees are because you'd be burying the trunks. And that...
Kill the trees.
Yeah, right. So if you wanted to do any major grade changes, you'd have to take out some of the trees. I wouldn't advocate removing the pine needles, though, because they're probably helping to hold things in place by covering up the sand, which is highly erodible. I'm just trying to remember if there's somebody at DNR that deals with that kind of issue. You might want to try the DNR forester that's up in that area, the district.
I know there's guys at Trout Lake.
Yeah. You might want to see if they have any other suggestions, but I can't see any major.
There's not a lot you can do there.
Yeah, I can't see
great.
Any major grade changes with the trees in place.
You take the trees out, you can put a cover crop, or you know, there'd be things you could put in there, but you don't want to get rid of the trees.
Yeah,
so.
Because the roots are holding.
Yeah, the roots are doing a pretty good job, or as good a job as can be done to hold that soil in.
There might be something you could do at the base of the slope, but... That's a tough one.
Yeah, it is. Thanks for calling, Allison. And you can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Tina, or in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. Last summer, I planted about 20 different tomato plants, maybe 4 or 5 different varieties, and I virtually got no tomatoes. The plants immediately started dying from the ground up. And the few tomatoes I did get were rotten on the inside. And I'm wondering if there's, you know, there appears to be a problem in the soil. And I'm wondering if there is something that I can do this fall or even next spring so that I don't have this recurring problem. This has been something that has been going on for a few years, but this year it just completely destroyed the entire garden.
Okay, well, I'm not sure which. There are a number of different things that could be going on here. The first one is late blight, and we first saw a real good incidence of that in the state in the year prior to this summer. You might also have verticillium wilt, which is a soil-borne pathogen, and unfortunately, it's viable for a long, long time in the soil. So all you can do for that is try and get plants that are resistant to it. You look on the seed pack, and there's a V, and that means that it's somewhat resistant.
Well, you know, my tomato plants were all resistant to verticillium wilt.
Okay. Well, it might have been.
That's something I always look for.
Okay. It might have been the late blight then. The other thing that is possible, I suppose, is if you have black walnut in the area.
No, we don't.
Okay. Have you tried moving the tomatoes to a different area?
Well, I move them to a slightly different area every year, but. I'm somewhat limited in how far I can move them.
Yeah.
You might want to try... you might want to try some of them in pots next year to see if that alleviates the problem, because if it is a soil-borne pathogen, most of those, it's really difficult to get rid of.
We used pots this year, and we just had great luck with tomatoes. We had some large pots, and we only had three tomatoes plants that we raised, but, boy, we just tons. In fact, I just took the last tomatoes off this past week. So we had lots.
You're making me jealous. You're making me jealous.
You might consider pots, or I don't know if a raised bed would do it or not.
Raised bed would probably, well, it is open at the bottom to the soil, and if they root down into that, and if that's the problem, that could be, you know, the roots, they probably go down deeper than you would make your average raised bed, so... I guess I wouldn't really recommend that. But I would try pots for
next year.
Yeah.
If you can't move them, try pots for a year or two. And make sure you clean that area out,
too. Any of the old vegetable matter, make sure you get that out of there. And if you have the same problem next year, send a sample in to Brian Huddleston at the Plant Disease Diagnostics Clinic. See if you can find out what it is. And you can just Google PDDC on the internet, and you should come up with their website, and he can grow out the pathogen. There is a charge for it, but at this point, if you've lost so many tomatoes over a few years, it's definitely
well
worth
spent.
It. Yeah, and then you'll find out for sure what the story is.
Yep, there you go. Good luck, and you know you can try. I'd certainly try a few in pots. Mm-hmm. And I would clean that, as you suggest, clean that area out really well. Maybe try a few more on the ground, in the ground, and see what happens. But you could have pretty good luck with the pots.
Yeah.
As long as you watch your watering.
Yes.
And I would also say I applied some vegetable fertilizer to the pots over the course, you know, once a month or thereabouts.
Yeah, or an organic product.
Or an organic product, but that really made a huge difference.
Yeah, the thing is that every time you water, of course, you're losing some of the nutrition out of the soil with those pots because it leaches out. And so you're right, the adding that fertilizer is really critical.
Made a huge difference. Thanks again for calling. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our on-air producer. On Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. On Garden Talk, Lisa Johnson, Dane County Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest today. You can join in at 800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. Lou in Milwaukee up next. Hi, thank you for calling.
How are you doing?
Good.
For that lady with that sandy slope, shaded sandy slope problem?
Yeah.
Got a wild idea. She could possibly use lasagna gardening techniques to change that sand to more organic makeup, then plant moss.
Moss, okay.
Which thrives in shade.
That's very true. That would probably help with some of that problem. Yeah, and the needles are organic matter too, although they don't decay very well. But if she wanted to bring up some leaves and put those on top of it, maybe a thin layer of compost. But you know, you can't put many
can't put
feet.
A lot. No.
But that probably would be fine.
Yep, another way to do it. Thanks, Lou.
That's a good suggestion.
Nancy in La Crosse, we turn to you. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Larry and Lisa. Thanks for the show.
Sure.
The gal that called in about her hillside with sand, the other possibility I would suggest would be consider prairie. Either call Neil DeBoe and get some suggestions for plantings. That would take care of a lot of her problems.
That could if she probably
she
has to open.
She has enough sun.
She has enough sun, yeah.
Yeah. The question I had is I have two pagoda dogwoods that I planted last year. They're about 5 feet tall, and they did pretty well most of the summer. And this fall they had kind of a whitish on the leaves, which caused the leaves to curl some.
Okay.
And I was wondering what might be the problem.
It's probably powdery mildew.
Yep.
And that's pretty much strictly a cosmetic disease. There are some plants that it can cause twig death on, for example, ninebark. But usually it's not a big deal, and especially if it's at the end of the year, all that you need to do is make sure that you rake up the fallen leaves, and it should be fine. A lot of plants do tend to get that at the far end of the season when the leaves are starting to senesce or die, and usually not something that's going to hurt them in the long run.
There you go.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And, oh boy, lots of callers. Irma in Glendale. Hi.
Hi. I planted asparagus for the first time, and I don't know what to do for it in the fall. And then I don't know what to do for it in the spring.
Ah, okay. Well, fortunately, asparagus is pretty darn easy.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. All that you have to do is you can cut down the old stalks at this time of year to about 2 inches or so. I don't like to cut them back totally because I like to know where they are in the spring. And you can, you know, pull out the remnants in the spring if they're dead and so on. And when they come up in the spring, you're not supposed to harvest for the first year when you plant them, which you probably have followed those directions. And they say even the next year that you're only supposed to harvest very lightly. And so you'd let them grow up another year, and now the third year, you should get a really good production. If you can't stand waiting and you just have to have some asparagus, you can harvest a few spears, but don't harvest.
Don't overdo it.
Yeah, don't harvest any more than like a third.
Do you fertilize it all in the spring?
Have you had a soil test done in that area?
No.
Okay. What's the soil like? Is it clay or sandy or?
In between. No, it's not sandy, but I've been putting a lot of table scraps in there for quite a few years, and so it's not really bad. It's not really good.
Okay. You can use a regular vegetable type of fertilizer, like a 10-10-10 type of thing if you wanted to, or you could just continue using compost or composted manure, one of those.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you very much for calling. And let's go to Ann next. Ann in Madison, hi. Are you there?
Yes. I have two questions.
Okay.
One is regarding tomato and pepper plants, which I had big, beautiful plants, but no or very few fruit. And I wondered what I can do with that for next year. And the other question is, I see trees with planters built around them, and so the ground is built up about a foot at the base of the tree. Is that harmful for trees? Thank you.
Okay, let me take that last one first. It can be for... well, there are some trees like silver maples that can take, you know, 3-4 inches over their root system because they're river bottom trees. And, you know, that's something they can tolerate. Oaks do not tolerate it well at all. And certainly a foot is too much. Just about anything. So, yeah, that does harm the tree. For your tomatoes and peppers, did you grow them in a new area this year?
I've been growing them in pots,
mostly, okay,
and otherwise in just the garden, which is not a new area.
Mm-hmm.
I oftentimes don't get many fruit, and I would.
Did you fertilize at all?
I use compost.
Okay, how much sun does that area get?
Well, because of our neighbor's trees, the sun gets behind the trees. You know. Late afternoon, and so then we don't get any sun back there. But so they probably get about 6 hours of sun.
Okay, that's a bare minimum.
That'd
for
be the bare.
Yeah, I suspect that's partly what the problem is.
I'd be tempted to get a little bit of vegetable fertilizer in there.
It may definitely in the pots.
In the pots, for sure.
That's the other thing that could be causing a problem. The compost is wonderful stuff, but it doesn't have a whole lot of nutrition in it in terms of the actual phosphorus and potassium and so on. So if you're not, you know, if your plants are not growing very well, if they're kind of pale, not producing, that could be part of it. Also, if you're growing heirloom tomatoes, those tend to need a bit more sun than some of the others.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking, you know, we're not talking huge amount. You know, if you put a tablespoon of in a pot,
mm-hmm.
you know, about a tablespoon of a 10-10-10 vegetable fertilizer mm-hmm. once a month or so, it's going to make a huge difference.
Yeah, there are granular types where you can just sprinkle in an amount, and then there are the what I'd call quick release types, such as Miracle-Gro, that you have to mix up with water and water in. Either way, I think that should do fine for you.
Thanks for calling, Ann. Appreciate it. Jeremy in Appleton, it is your turn. Hi.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
Say, we moved into a house early this spring, and we were delighted to find that the previous owners had planted all these gorgeous flowers around the house. And neither of us really have a green thumb, so I'm wondering, you know, I just don't want to kill them. wondering when we should fertilize, in the spring or in the fall or both?
Spring.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, spring?
Yep. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
the things that you want to fertilize in the fall would be things like tulip and daffodil bulbs. And
okay.
If you have a lot of those mixed in with the flowers, then spring fertilizing isn't so good for the bulbs. So it's nice if you can try and keep them kind of separated. Also, most bulbs don't like a whole lot of water, whereas most of our annuals and perennials do. So the two of them don't get along as well as one might hope, although daffodils can usually hang on for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thank you for calling. Email from Kevin in Oshkosh, who's wondering about types of fruit and nut trees that can easily resist winters in the Midwest. Was wondering if there were any northern cultivars of figs or pomegranates that you are aware of. I'm not aware of any pomegranates.
No, I'm not either. We can't even grow nectarines here. or
no.
Peaches are iffy, although one of my master gardeners has a 13-year-old tree that he brings me some peaches from every year, and that just amazes me.
Yeah, bye. So the figs and the pomegranates,
not so much, I'm
not
afraid.
So much. But other fruit and nut trees.
Sure. There's hazelnuts, which is a native plant. The American hazelnut, or filbert, sometimes called that, Corallus americana. Now, the problem is you have to get to the nuts before the squirrels do. So that's always sort of an interesting race.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to grow saskatoons. Which are a
service berry?
Yeah, service berry. And it's a shorter version that has more fruits and larger fruits than the typical service berry. You know, you can usually grow cherries in zone 3 and even some of the apples. So there are a lot of choices. And if you're looking at tree fruits like hickory nuts, well, that's native.
Right.
So I believe that's only through zone 4, though, so I'm not sure where the caller said he was from.
Didn't get that.
Okay. Somewhere north.
Yeah, it was north. It was somewhere north. All right, so there you go. There are plenty of options. We've got some publications, extension publications on that, haven't we? On
fruit trees? We do. We have lots of publications on fruit trees at the Learning Store. There's growing cherries in Wisconsin and growing apples in Wisconsin and pears and so on.
So pretty easy to go online to the UW Learning Store.
Right.
Learningstore.org, is that what it is?
No, it's learningstore.uwex.edu.
Okay, there you go. Teresa in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hi. I've been wanting to ask this question for a number of years. I have a mugu pine bush that's about 6 feet across, 6 feet tall. And every winter when we have our heavy snowfalls, it just gets flattened to the ground. And my question is, can I tie it up, and would that be good for it to do that?
It recovers later on, I take it, or do you get branches?
Somewhat,
baggage?
But some of the branches have started getting a little twisted out because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I do go out there and try and, you know, shake them off.
Yeah, sure, with a broom or you know, dust them off and so on.
Right.
Yeah, and when we've had 100 inches of snow, it gets a little dicey, doesn't it?
Yeah, the particularly heavy snowfalls tend to, you know, just literally almost get it flattened to the ground.
Right. Okay, give me the dimensions again.
About 6 feet across, and it's getting up to about 6 feet tall now. It was a very tiny little thing when it started.
Yeah, that is the problem with mugu pines, is that unless you get a named variety, it's really iffy as to whether or not it's going to stay like a small plant or whether it's going to turn into a giant like yours did. A lot of variability in that. I mean, what I usually recommend for something like arborvitae is that you use old pantyhose to tie it up. You could use some kind of twine. I hate to have you do it too early, but on the other hand, if you wait until it freezes outside, then the branches are less pliable, and you know, you might damage them that way. I wouldn't tie it up real tightly.
Okay.
But yeah, you could do some of that.
I'm trying to keep the shape, I think,
right,
is what I'd like to do in it. Instead,
I understand.
It's kind of spreading more and more.
Yeah, I'd say again, don't tie it too tightly, but you can use some cotton rope or
something soft.
Yeah,
soft,
yeah, right.
I can get. I take it.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
That's the idea.
Right.
And then be sure and take it off right away in spring.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Christine in Marshfield has an overhead power line restriction in an area, and she's required to plant trees growing no taller than 15 feet at maturity. Can you suggest any hardy, attractive hardwood varieties other than mountain ash or crabapple? And 15 feet, you have to be kind of careful. Even those...
Yeah, the plants don't always read the book that says that they're only supposed to grow to 10 feet, so... other than crab apples, well, we do have, if it's in a shadier area, there is pagoda dogwood. You could use, well, most of the amelanchers are going to get to 20 feet.
Yeah.
You could try an ironwood. That's one of our native species. They get 15 to 20. You could try a Acer triflorum, which is three-flowered maple. I have one of those under power lines at my house.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very nice and hardy tree.
That's a pretty tree.
Yeah. And you could also try the Japanese tree lilac. That's another one that's very popular for under wires.
Good advice.
There, we do have a publication on the Learning Store that's called Power Planting. That is a publication that our woody ornamental specialist, Dr. Laura Gell, put together with the help of folks from MG&E, who are concerned about the power lines.
Absolutely.
To recommend a number of different plants that grow under power lines. So I'd recommend that you go to the learningstore.uwex.edu and check that one out.
And what's the title of that again?
Power Planting.
All right. Power Planting. All right. I like that. That's good.
Yeah.
All right, Terry in Green Bay, we're on to you. Hi, Terry.
Yes, good morning to you both.
Morning.
I'd just like to mention a product that's local here in the state out of the Egg Harbor up in Door County. It's a fertilizer. It's a liquid fertilizer, and I have no, you know, connection with it at all. Great. It's called Follis Watch Us Grow. It's a 888 liquid, 2 tablespoons to 1 gallon of water, especially people that have, you know, if you're trying to grow stuff in pots, it's excellent. It takes the nutrients in through both the foliage and what goes into the ground.
Can you say the name again? I didn't catch that.
Watch It Grow?
Follett's Watch It Grow. It's been around since the 50s, and there's a lot of people in the state that don't even know about it.
No, I guess I'm one of them. I know about Father Dom's Duck Dew, and I know about Milorganite and some of those other locally produced products, but that's one I hadn't heard of. Thank you for letting me know about that. I'll have to check that out.
Can I ask you, Lisa, have you talked to anybody that's had any success in repelling deer with Milorganite, please?
I haven't talked to anyone directly. It is one of the things that is usually recommended as a fertilizer that you can use that also happens to repel deer. I suspect that depending on how long it's been since the deer last ate and what the Milorganite is protecting, like an arborvitae versus a tomato plant, that's going to have a lot to do with how much the deer are repelled.
And I know when Scott Craven was on Larry's show, there was a gentleman that called in that was having problems with the bucks going into rut, and they're rubbing on his tamarack.
Yeah.
Same problem with my tamarack stands.
Mm-hmm.
It seems as soon as I throw that Milorganite around it, they haven't touched them now.
Yeah. Great.
You need to keep applying it.
Yeah, that is true, and you can't apply too much because it does have that, you know, nitrogen content, and you don't want to, and other nutrients, so of course you don't want to over apply that. But that's another nice option to have.
Okay.
And it's Watch Us Grow, right?
Follett's Watch Us Grow.
I just went online to take a look at it. I said Watch It Grow, but it's Watch Us Grow.
Yeah.
Oh, there it is.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Terry. And you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234, the number to call. Larry Mueller here with my guest today, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll go right back to the telephones here and take another call. Ron in Newburgh up next. Ron, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, good morning. Last year I got 220 pounds of grapes off of my about 75-foot-long grape arbor. This year I got 27 pounds.
Oh,
wow.
And I worked with one of the Ozaukee County Master Gardeners, and we went through the extension book on raising grapes in Wisconsin, and these are just the standard old Concords. And the best we could come up with was grape berry moth, because I had noticed there were some 3/8-inch, half-inch long, tiny little, in quotes, worms that caused half of each bunch to just be mush. And what the master gardener came up with was the best suggestion was to rake up the leaves in the area, because they make a chrysalis in the leaves and then they come up again next year. Well, when I raked yesterday, the problem is I've got the leaves have blown into an adjacent raspberry patch, and they've also blown into some tall grass. So I don't think that just raking up the leaves under the arbor is going to be enough. Do you have some chemical suggestion on grape berry moth?
Okay. Well, there are a couple things that you can do. First of all, as you mentioned, what they actually do is they pupate in the ground underneath the leaf debris, so it's not actually necessarily in the leaves. But you know, your raking might get rid of a few of them.
Yeah, maybe quite a few.
Yeah, one can only hope. They suggest that you might want to use pheromone traps, and you can usually get those online. There are a number of different companies that provide pheromone traps. The grape berry moth is one of the more important and damaging grape insects in Wisconsin, so it's not too surprising that you would have gotten it. What you should do is kind of with the pheromone traps, and you know there's instructions that come with that tell you how many moths you find in there, and, you know, using that to monitor the population and figure out when to do your applications of various insecticides. Unfortunately, the publication doesn't say which insecticide to use. What I would do is check with your local garden center and see what they have. I suspect it'll probably be something like 7, but not having the list in front of me, I'm not sure. I always worry with giving exact names of pesticide products because they change every year. Specialists usually do is they'll give you an active ingredient name that should be in the product, but they don't give you a brand name because chemical companies can actually change the active ingredient and still retain the brand name, and then you don't have the same product. So I would check again with your local garden center, and what needs to be on there is just grape berry moth, and that the product is okay for spraying on grapes. I'm not sure also you might be able to use some organic products such as neem oil, 70% neem oil, to help repel them.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Ron. Chuck in Lake Delton, we're on to you now. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hey, what I use this year for my tomato and pepper plants is generic antacids with calcium in them. And I put like 4 or 5 tablets around each plant and never had any problem with blossom end rot or the you know, brown stuff on the bottom. So I think a lot of the problem is that there's not enough calcium in the soil, or has it been leached out or whatever. But
yeah, if you grow in pots, that's a really good thing to do. Most of our soils, unless you're on sandy soils, do tend to actually have a fair amount of calcium in them. But when we have periods where it's very dry and then it's wet and then it's dry, what happens is that the plant is not able to take up the calcium because the moisture level is not even, and it can take it up to keep the leaves going, but unfortunately not fast enough for the developing fruits. I haven't heard of this method. Usually we use a calcium spray if people are having problems with that, but I'll bet you do a real good job of watering your plants as well.
Well, I use a soaker.
Oh, that's great. That'll help keep things absolutely consistent moisture. That's
that
a real good thing.
Off the soil and stuff.
Yeah,
but a lot of these tablets are kind of slow release and stuff. So if you just put that around there, then it usually helps it.
That's an interesting thing.
Thanks a lot for calling, Chuck. Appreciate it. And again, it's that even water that really, really helps too.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Well, we've got Debbie in Grant County has an apple tree that has some scrumptious apples had this fall. Great for eating and baking. Absolutely no worms in any of them. I'm wondering what I should do for the future. Since it ain't broke, don't fix it? Or should I be going the vinegar banana in a jug route and that red fake apple with tangleweed on it to prevent bugs and so forth from getting in there? Her main concern is bugs. Worms haven't found the tree yet.
Yeah, that could be it, because usually, unless you do some severe intervention, usually you tend to get insect problems. But I would say that if you aren't seeing a lot of insect damage, like you said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But I would certainly keep an eye out and monitor your plants every week. Look for damage in the fruits. If you do start to see those kinds of things, check with your extension office as to which insect it is, and then they can get you set up on a routine. There are two types of spray routines, and you can use organic products, but it takes a lot more work. But there are There's kale and clay, which is sold in a product called Surround. And when you spray it on your tree, yes, your tree looks like it's been sprayed with cement, but it, and you do have to spend some time cleaning that off of the apples, but it really helps with our big three, the plum curculio, the codling moth, and the apple maggot. So if you're looking for an organic way to go, that is one
good
of
way
them.
To do it.
Yeah.
All right, Jenny and Tomahawk. Hello.
Hello. Good morning and thank you.
Sure.
I have two questions, mainly about mulch.
Okay.
Mulch. I have a rhododendron,
mm-hmm.
Strawberry vanilla hydrangea. And it's a, I can't remember if it's choke cherry or choke berry, but it's something to attract the birds that are all new this year. And it says mulch, but I don't know what mulch means. I mean, I know what mulch means, but what kind of mulch do
mm-hmm.
I?
Yeah.
Okay, and you live in where again?
Tomahawk.
Tomahawk. Okay, you're way up there, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's see, for the rhododendron, that's the one I guess I would be most concerned about. For the rhododendron, you probably want to use a winter mulch of straw. And you wait until after the ground has frozen, and then you can kind of pack straw around it. The other thing that you could do is get some chicken wire and make a circular kind of cylinder around it and pack that with oak leaves. The chokeberry, I suspect that's probably what you've got, aronia. Actually, it's produces lovely berries, but it's called chokeberry for a reason, and that's that the berries are quite acidic, not very tasty for the birds, and they'll eat it as a last resort. But you'll get a nice fruit display.
Mm-hmm.
They are starting to grow that commercially in Wisconsin. It's got lots of potential for juices and so on, but you do have to add a bit of sugar.
No.
So that one I'm not real worried about. I believe that's hardy to zone 3, so I don't think that that's a big deal. If you wanted to put some shredded bark mulch around the roots to help protect the roots, especially in the summer, from drying out and so on, that's fine, but I don't think it really requires a winter mulch. And the third one was the
strawberry hydrangea.
Yeah, that new hydrangea. I'm trying to remember whether that's one of the ones that you cut down or whether that's an arborescence species that you don't. Yeah.
don't want to make a mistake on that.
No. That would be a good one to type in there.
we'll look into that.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just not sure on that one. There have been so many new hydrangeas, wonderful plants that have been coming out. And some of them are unfortunately not quite as nice as advertised, and others are really turning out to be nice plants. Okay, it's a paniculata. All right, with the paniculatas, you don't need to cut those back. However, that particular plant, you're way up in Tomahawk, it might not hurt for the first year to put some mulch around the base. I'm not real worried about any of the branches dying off or anything, but it probably wouldn't hurt to protect the roots for the first year. I don't think you'll need to do it after that, though.
There you go.
What would I use for mulch on the
base? Shredded bark mulch would be fine.
Okay, and another. Thank you very much for that. I have a question about an apple tree.
Okay.
I bought a Pink Lady
mm-hmm.
this year, and I had grown it before, and it was just wonderful. But this year, the leaves are speckled. You know, like the little black spots on them, so they don't look healthy,
mm-hmm.
and they turn yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if there's nothing I can do about it, if that's a bad tree, or if there's something I can do about it, and should I mulch it?
Well, I advocate a summer mulch for just about everything in sandy soil. You know, bark mulch around the base, not touching the trunk, but, you know, a couple inches of shredded bark mulch around the base of the trunk. And what you've got sounds a whole lot like apple scab. And I don't know whether that variety is supposed to be resistant, but apple scab is one of those things that we see all the time. And it is very hard to get rid of. So it could be because it was under stress and it was its first year that it was more susceptible. I guess I would give it a couple years and see whether you still continue to have that problem. There are sprays that you can use, but you have to use them a lot.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Enjoy your program.
Oh, thank you. Thanks a lot for calling, Jenny. Appreciate your call. Lisa Johnson, our guest today, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. You know, on Garden Talk, it's always a lot of fun, isn't it, to talk about what a variety of topics we get.
I love to talk about plants. So.
And, you know, if you don't make it on the air, a good place to go is the Learning Store. You can go to the Learning Store at uwex.edu, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes you can look up the information you need right there, or obviously call your county extension horticulture agent as well. Lisa Johnson, our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Great to have her with us, and thank you so much for listening in. I hope you'll join us with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. You know, Sliver in Elkhart Lake has been waiting a long time, so let's go right there. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry, Lisa, like your show. I've got a question about mulberry trees. I've tried to get a bunch of mulberries and then plant them, and I can't get none of them to sprout. And can mulberry trees be cloned if they're at least 15 years old tree grown in a lion fence?
Wow, I'm surprised that usually the problem is that people are calling me saying, how can I get rid of these darn seedlings? So I'm surprised that they didn't sprout for you. There is a book by Michael Durr that is called, I can never remember the title because it's
Plant
so
Propagation,
darn long.
Isn't
it's
it?
Plant Propagation, and then there's another long part of it, but it's of woody ornamentals. And most of the county offices have a copy of that, and it will give you exact instructions how to germinate by seed, whether it needs a cold period, how deep it needs to be, whatever is necessary.
It's
usually
very
nothing
good
much. Yeah, it's an excellent book.
Very good book.
Okay.
And you might be able to get it also if you wanted a copy for yourself. If you're interested in doing a lot of woody plant propagation, you might be able to find it on Amazon or eBay or something
Michael
like that.
Michael Durr, his last name is spelled D-E?
No, D-I-R-R.
Oh, that's right, D-I-R-R.
Yeah.
I never remember. Two R's, I remember that part.
That's where I would go to for the exact instructions. You probably could do some grafting of the mulberries if you had a rootstock to graft onto the scion, but if you can't get the seeds to germinate, then you're having a problem.
So I would take a look at what Michael Durr has to say about that. Thanks for calling.
The Dane County office does have, Elkhart Lake. Let's see, is that in Walworth?
Is that what?
What county are you in?
I am in Sheboygan County.
Oh, you're in Sheboygan. Okay. They might have that up there in their office. You might want to check with their horticulture section.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Stella in Sturgeon Bay. Let's go to you now. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I was calling with an alternative solution for the woman with the Mugo pine?
Yep.
Tree?
Yeah.
Weeded down
Mugo
by
pines.
The snow?
Yes.
In the UP, in the snow belt up in the UP?
Yeah.
What they do is around evergreen trees is they build a framework out of 2x4s.
Hmm.
It looks like basically it looks like a very a ladder that
sure.
has really wide steps. I mean, you don't have to make it narrow steps. About I would guess they're probably about 2 feet apart or something.
Hmm.
And they use them year after year, so obviously they make them in sections that come apart
mm-hmm.
and fasten together. And they, the ones that I've seen usually are around a tapered tree, so they have kind of a pyramidal shape
yeah.
to them. But what they do is they basically, they catch, you know, I think they keep a lot of the snow off of the plant, and they also support the branches from spreading out.
Mm-hmm. Do they put burlap or anything over the top of the structure?
It's possible to do that, and okay. it's also possible to just leave it open.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. They yes. do get some serious snow up there.
Yes,
so
they do.
I can imagine that that would be necessary in some cases.
And with the plant that she described, as large as it is,
right.
it might be a good idea to just put some 2x4s, you know, maybe like a hatchwork across the top.
Mm. Over the top, you
over
mean?
The top
yeah.
of the house, yeah.
Try and keep some of the,
yeah.
the snow
that's
off.
That's a good idea. And
yeah,
it,
thank
it
you.
Actually could look...
It looks a little weird, but it works. But it works really well.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Look.
Hey, you could spray paint it some wild colors and call it art.
There you go. Thanks, Noah. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. And Paul in Duluth, Minnesota. We're on to you now. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I'm coming from a point of confusion here, I'm afraid. I've listened to your show for a long time, and I've heard about, you know, planting the same crop in the same space, and, you know, the idea of kind of rotating out. I have most of my garden are in really large containers on my deck, but I also have about an 8-foot by 4-foot strip that I grow acorn squash in, and for the past 3 years, I've had a really good crop of acorn squash, but this year I got nothing. I also had a problem with my peppers, and I'm wondering if it would be. Now I've put a lot of money into this dirt.
You
know,
yeah.
I really have with compost and topsoil, and I'm wondering if I could gain any advantage by taking all the soil out of these boxes and that strip on the ground and mixing them, those soils together, and redepositing them. Would I gain anything or would I lose anything? I haven't had a problem with disease. It's just I don't know exactly what went wrong this year.
Okay. You were using the same variety of squash and so on. Did it flower?
Yeah, beautiful flowers, but it did produce fruit, but it never grew to any appreciable size. They're about the size of maybe like a tennis ball or something.
Yeah.
That's disappointing.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, like I say, it was beautiful foliage, and, I mean, there was no powdery mildew or anything else. I don't think it's...
That's unusual.
Pardon?
I say that's kind of unusual.
Yeah, it was just amazing. It just didn't take off the way it usually does.
Okay. And you didn't apply a whole lot of extra nitrogen fertilizer or...
Well, I'd spray it with like Miracle-Gro, I tried to make sure the soil was well aerated and mm-hmm.
And is that what you've done every year?
Yeah.
I
live right along the lake shore, Lake Superior. And, you know, gardening is always kind of tricky here, but...
It's always a gamble.
Yeah, I'm just kind of wondering if there would be any advantage to me mixing those soils
I don't think so.
No.
And let me tell you why. The thing is that different families of plants tend to be susceptible to different soil-borne diseases. And when you have the same family, like the tomato pepper family or the cucurbits, which would include your melons and your squash and so on, being grown in the same soil for a long period of time, the pathogens can build up in that soil. And so that's why they tell you to rotate to a different family that has different susceptibilities so that the pathogens don't have something to chomp on, you know, that helps keep them going and lets them build up. So I would, you know, still advise rotation. If you've been using the same soil in those areas for quite a while, I would definitely, with your tomatoes and so on, change that out. What you could do is you could compost that material for a couple of years, particularly if you have a hot compost pile, and it should take the pathogens out, at least most of them. Not verticillium wilt, but it should take...
pretty much everything
else.
Yeah,
and so I the reason that I wouldn't mix them is because if you decide to grow something in your squash bed, like tomato, and you've already put the tomato soil in there, there might tend to be a greater incidence of those pathogens that are a problem for tomatoes. You see what I'm getting at?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I wouldn't do that, but I would. I know you've put a lot of money into soil. If you have a nice compost pile, though, that's a good way to get more soil.
Absolutely. There you go, Paul. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we had John from the town of Vernon, who was a number of spruce branches cut from trees that had a type of fungus, so he cut them out. I also have a number of black walnut branches. Can either of these be chipped and used for mulch? Also, can shredded maple leaves be used for mulch? Shredded maple leaves can
That's
be used.
Fine.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I'd be a little leery about the black walnut.
The black walnut, unless it's on paths that aren't near plants, I would not use because it does contain some of that juglone, which is a chemical that the black walnut produces to outcompete its neighbors. And it does that by putting the chemical actually suppresses the growth or outright kills various types of plants. There are some that can, you know, compete with it or tolerate it, but many can't. So I would keep that away from any area where you have plants. The spruce branches...
had a fungus of some
yeah,
sort?
Yeah, I don't... If it's a needle fungus, you could be spreading that. I guess I probably, you know, if you just have the branches left, if it was a needle disease and all the needles have gone off, sure, you can chip it up and use that. But if it's still got needles that are infected on there, I guess I would avoid that.
Bush in Mequon, we're on to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good afternoon, Larry and Lisa. I appreciate it. I enjoy your program.
Thank you.
Step one. Something's puzzled me for a number of years. We own some property in northern Michigan, and somebody's got to explain to me what determines how long a tree lives. I'm looking at probably like pine or spruce or hemlock or fir. Well, what determines how long those live?
Okay. There are so many factors.
Yeah.
There are some trees that have kind of a built-in lifespan, and I've seen tables of these. I'm just trying to remember what publication I saw them in. But it was, you know, like an ash tree might live 75 years. Of course, this is pre-emerald ash borer. Or a redbud usually only lives like 25 years. And so there are some that are kind of genetically programmed,
okay.
But also nature versus nurture business comes into play, where if the plant is planted in a challenging area where its roots get flooded all the time, or where the soil is very hot and dry, and if it's got paving that goes over its roots or something like that, that's really going to affect the lifespan of the tree. I remember Mike Maddox giving a talk and comparing a street tree and then the same species in a forest. And it was like 7-year life expectancy in one of those little tree tombs in the sidewalk in the city versus something like 60 years in a forest.
Yeah.
So
you've answered my question. I appreciate
it. Probably more than you wanted to know.
Thanks.
You can stop talking now, Lisa.
Thanks for calling. Richard in Reedsburg. Hi.
Yes, I have a Canadian cherry and a small berm that has some growths on the branches that are black and like a, they look like a small fist.
Yep,
and
I'm wondering, that's black knot.
Black knot.
Black knot fungus. If you, let's see, I we've redone the Wisconsin Horticulture website, and I believe that one is still up if you go to that website. And unfortunately, I don't have our new...
Oh, it's just go to the University of Wisconsin Department of Horticulture.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that would work, too. Either the Learning Store, which I know has a fact sheet on it. Unfortunately, there isn't a heck of a lot that you can do about it. And what the fact sheet or the publication is going to tell you to do is to prune off the affected areas. And it's a fungal disease that causes this kind of growth to occur. And it really does look like poop on a stick. And when the leaves fall off, boy, you can really see.
Really see it.
And it's unfortunately rather common. In fact,
it's a wonderful tree because it changes color and it does a lot of things during the season with the green leaves, and then they kind of go burgundy. And
Yeah.
Great trees.
And it's too bad. They really are very susceptible to that. It usually doesn't kill the tree, but it does disfigure it. Over time, it might weaken it enough to have a problem. But if you can kind of keep up with the formation of those galls and getting rid of that material, I wouldn't compost it.
No. And be sure to sterilize your cutting tool.
Yeah, your cutting tools.
Between each cut.
Yes.
Each and every cut.
All exactly.
Right. Well, very, very good. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Tom in Whitewater. Hello.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
We have some spirea plants on the north side of our house that are about 15 years old. I've trimmed them back each fall a little bit, but I'm wondering whether I should be trimming them down, you know, considerably further, maybe within 6 to 8 inches of the ground.
Do you know what kind of spirea they are by chance?
Yeah, we have some that are gold mound.
Okay.
In the back of the house, which faces south, and then the ones in the front, the gold mound are on the north side of the house, and the gold flame are on the front side of the house.
Okay, let's start with the gold flame.
Okay.
Since these are summer flowering plants, you can prune them in the early spring. I usually do it in March because there's less snow. You want to do it, if possible, before they start to leaf out. And what you do is you take a third of the biggest, oldest branches right out at the base. And since you haven't done this for probably a number of years, it's going to take a few years for you to get it back with a lot of new vigorous growth, but that's okay. You take out a third of the biggest, oldest stems at the base, and then you do your main pruning for shaping. And you can cut it down halfway this first time. That shouldn't be a big deal for it. And then if that still isn't the height that you want it, you can cut it more in succeeding years.
Okay, now you're talking about the gold flame at this point.
Right, yeah.
And the gold flame look beautiful right now. They're just golden.
They are a nice plant.
So I should take the after that color goes away, take the in the spring, though, just take the main shoots out and then cut it down a little bit.
About a third.
Yeah, if I don't know whether you want to make it a lot shorter. It's up to you. If you like it at that height, it'll certainly be okay.
Okay.
Don't cut it though at the exact same height every year. Otherwise, you get a whole bunch of little shoots that are forming at the ends of the branches, and they tend to be pretty dense and they shade out things underneath. So
I see. Okay.
The other thing, the gold mound, that's more of a dwarf plant, so you don't need to really prune that too heavily, but you use the same sort of technique.
Okay, but when you say that's a dwarf plant, it's probably 3 feet tall right now.
That's... You remember one called Little Princess that was supposed to stay about 2 feet tall? Well, I've seen it 5 feet tall. It's called a dwarf because the distance between the internodes, between where the leaves come out on each branch, are shorter. It's supposed to be a little bit slower growing, but as you have noted, that still didn't stop it from getting 3 feet tall. So if you want to take that one down again to have it a little bit shorter, you use the same pruning.
Same procedure.
Yes, thank you. Pruning technique and take it down, you know, a third if you'd like.
Okay, and that has no color to it at all right now. It's just, it's sort of blah right now.
Mm-hmm.
So may I trim that now in the fall, or should I wait for the spring with that one also?
We usually want to wait until we're sure that they're very dormant. The reason for that is, hey, this is Wisconsin, and we could pop up with some more 60-degree days, and we don't want it to start growing again.
All right. Very good.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see. We've got John in Madison. John, hello.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Oh, okay. I have a cedar tree that's about 40 feet tall, and it looks nice. I like it. It's not a full-grown cedar, obviously, because it's still sort of small. But last winter, when all that snow hit, it bent the tree over so bad I could touch the top of it at the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And now it's gone. Now, of course, I knocked some snow off, and now it's pointing at a 90-degree angle. And I'd like to know if there's anything that I can...
Oh, dear. You said it's 40 feet tall?
Yeah, approximately. Yeah, it's fairly small. Maybe it's more like 30.
Okay. So it's an arborvitae then, and...
It's a cedar.
Okay. A juniper?
Cedar.
There's red cedar, which is actually a juniper.
Juniper, yeah.
And
right.
White cedar is an arborvitae. I'm just trying to figure out which tree.
Oh, I don't know. I thought it was just a cedar. What?
Does it have kind of fan-shaped, kind of flat foliage?
Well, it's definitely an evergreen. I mean, it's a tree. Yeah, it's sort of flat.
Yeah. You know, we got about a minute to resolve this, and I don't know if we can do it.
I think that staking it, you know, would be the answer, but you probably need a professional with a cherry picker in there to do it.
I would. This is one where you need a certified arborist.
Yes.
And it probably, you want to keep that tree, it's probably worth the money to get a certified arborist out there to take a look. And they have the equipment and can do things that you and I can't do because we don't have the equipment. So I definitely would go that way.
Mm-hmm. You can just Google in Wisconsin Certified Arborist, and that'll take you right to their website. And you can find one in your area.
Absolutely. And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Somebody emailed in about Creeping Charlie and how to get rid of it. Well, it's too late this year anyway, so you got to wait till next spring.
I'm afraid so.
Shoot me an email next spring or give a call to Garden Talk next spring. Sometime early in the spring, and we can talk about that. Lisa, thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
It's been a great pleasure. You'll come back and be with us again, I assume.
I certainly hope so.
All right. Lisa Johnson is the Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Monday, we'll take a look at aches and pains and sprains and strains. Join us then, and stay with us now on the Ideas Network.